Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It's the 20th of November. For those of you who are working sort of the typical work week, it's hump day.
Right.
Yeah. Today's because tomorrow would be Friday, and then you have the holiday.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so that works. whatever I can do to help make it seem a little bit better that it's Tuesday. Okay, good morning. Welcome. Nice to have you here. Let me get into introducing everybody. Because of the weather this morning, we're waiting on Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union. And he got bogged down in traffic and called about 10 minutes ago and said he would be here shortly. So
I heard there was a terrible accident on the 90.
Yeah. There is. And it was the last week has just been dreadful driving in. It's just every day has just been.
Yeah, it took me over an hour to get here this morning.
And you're local, right? Yeah.
So people should do it when I do it, and I do it. You know, 4 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to say.
So well, I think what happens is people do start doing that, and then it just adds up, and it's progressive. And then by the time we come out, it's just, the roads are a mess.
Yeah. Got to leave early.
Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, it's a metaphysical question.
Okay. Well, you figure that out, and I will introduce Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration and Law Clinic, usually with us on Mondays, but was traveling yesterday and nice enough to come in today. We appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
She's the real thing, by the way. You know, she travels all around the world. She talks about this immigration thing, and we have an immigration topic we could talk about today, don't we?
Yes, we do. In fact, it's our top story this morning. Yeah. Some big news overnight on this particular issue and of what's going on. So we'll get right to that. Let me just remind you that if you would like to get in on the conversation, all you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And we would love to hear from you. So overnight, a judge ordered the Trump administration to resume accepting asylum claims from migrants no matter where or how they entered the United States. President Trump had sought to deny asylum claims from those who entered the country outside official border crossings. This is the latest in what has really been an unfortunate saga that we have seen play out. Judge John Tiger, is that pronouncing that correct? T-I-G-A-R. So it could be Tagar, but I think I'm going to go with Tiger. The United States District Court in San Francisco issued a temporary restraining order that blocks the government from carrying out a new rule that denies protections to people who enter the country illegally. The order, which suspends the rule until the case is decided by the court, applies nationally. So what does that mean, Sarah?
That means that asylum seekers can come to this country the way that the law intended, which is exactly how it's written. This is one of those real clear-cut examples of an overstep by the Trump administration. It's a over 35-page order, so there are a lot of issues involved besides what the statute actually says. And it's the INA, right, the Immigration and Nationality Act, that clearly states that asylum seekers can present themselves anywhere. Why is that? Because of international law. These are refugees. That's the point. They're fleeing to come into this country to seek safety. And once they get here, there is a process called a credible fear interview.
Would you say that again? One more time.
A credible fear interview. Mm-hmm. So that's usually conducted at wherever the person enters if they're detected by immigration. If not, they can apply for asylum affirmatively. That is to say, they're not being actively removed from the United States. And then asylum can also be a defense to being deported. And that's another way that asylum comes up. But this rule was really intended to keep lawful immigrants out of the country. It is lawful to enter anywhere and claim asylum. So it shouldn't be as difficult. I think the judge is being very, very careful.
Is he a Trump judge? Do we know that, by the way? Do we know who appointed him?
No, but he's had a lot of really fantastic immigration rulings in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think to the extent that there is some forum selection happening here, because there are many, many parties involved in this lawsuit, including Innovation Law Lab, who we've collaborated with on the Albany County Jail Project. And we have big news on that from last week, too.
Yes, we do.
And you have this East Bay organization, legal services organization. But really, this is a preliminary stage of the process where the judge is saying, reinstate the old way of doing things for asylum seekers, and I'm going to make the government explain why they think that they have the right to do this. So the 90-day asylum ban is lifted, essentially.
Well, I, of course, am in sympathy with what you're saying and everything else. But if I was a Trumpian, if I was, how would I be arguing this? I'd be arguing this is one more way, incentive for somebody to sneak into this country, because it's like the old game of Ringolivio. Once you're there, you're in a lot better shape than if you're on the outside, right?
And that's exactly Trump's line. The justification for this policy is that there are, you remember the comment that former Attorney General Sessions made about a year ago about the dirty immigration lawyers?
Right.
That's what that was all about. The claim that immigration lawyers are helping clients fabricate asylum claims in order to help them stay here. Well, I've litigated over 100 asylum cases. Mm-hmm. Each case has taken over 300 pages of documentation and proof, every single one of them, from all over the world, 15 to 30 page affidavits, supporting documents. There may be some bad players out there, but the percentage of people who are claiming lawful asylum claims are much higher than the small percentages of people trying to allege asylum when they don't have a case.
So how expected was it by people who are very much in the front lines of this, like yourself, that a court would come in and say, because it was so clear-cut, that, oh, well, the court's going to step in and say that you've obviously overstepped your bounds here?
Yeah, I actually thought it was going to be because they filed the lawsuit the day after or the day. Yeah, the day of the day it went into effect. And it was a Friday. And I remember thinking, well, the court's going to rule today.
Right away.
Yeah, right away. I thought it was going to be like you remember the Muslim ban?
Right.
There was a court ruling that morning, at least for JFK. It wasn't nationwide. But I think, with this like 35 plus page order, that signaled to me that they were going to take some time to put all the pieces together. And they
Who's
heard
the, day, the judge, you
the
mean?
Judge yeah. and his staff. I mean, yeah. clerks helped.
The 35 them. Pages was their response to the Trump order.
Well, the judge's response, right?
Yes.
But there had to be emergency pleadings filed. And the reason why it's called injunctive relief is because that's how you do an emergency stop. Mm. There are all kinds of proofs that you have to have in order to do that. But that's sort of like, that's just standard practice now for this administration. They do something crazy and then lawyers quick prepare for a request for a preliminary injunction.
Well, is it really crazy or do they know, or are they shrewd in that it doesn't really matter whether it happens nearly as much as that they can show the base that they're doing one more despicable thing?
Yeah, well, and this came around the midterm elections. This started to ramp up then with the caravan. We saw this morning there's a ramp down now. The Pentagon's drawing back the 5,000 troops from the border.
How did that happen? What's that about?
It's about a political stunt, and it always was.
Yeah, so but doesn't it also indicate to us that he was never really all that serious about it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but people who have been on the ground on these issues knew that going in. There were reporters who were embedded in the caravan. We had estimates of the size. And the size of the caravan, my friend Camille Mackler at the New York Immigration Coalition always points out, it wouldn't fill a minor league baseball stadium. And it's actually the amount of people that are processed in an average week at the border. So it was much ado over nothing, and maybe just saved a couple of elections in the process.
Yeah, well,
getting people to the polls.
It really was about politics.
Yep,
but it didn't. I mean, it. But it didn't say. I mean, knowing the results of this month's elections, it didn't have, and from the exit polling, it did not have a profound effect.
That's true. I think immigration was like the number four issue.
Yeah.
The top issue was healthcare, as
right.
I recall.
Healthcare and jobs.
Healthcare
but,
and jobs.
But the But again, to play the devil's advocate for a second, you know, it may have been number four, but let's say it was four indeed, and it got some votes. That's how you make. That's how you win an election. You know, you put it all together.
Well, and I think it's less about immigration as an issue. A lot of people don't really understand immigration as an issue, right. Because the law is really, really new. But it's more about getting people to the polls. Immigration is a divisive issue. And so your top concern might be health care. But maybe you weren't planning on voting this time around. It's a way to rally people to the polls around other issues that are on this Trumpian platform.
And it's worldwide, right? I mean, when you think about it, it's worldwide.
Definitely. But, I mean, and the president's trip to Europe sort of cemented where he is, where he's standing with world leaders in terms of subverting international law that's been on the books, you know, since the world wars and even before then. I mean, if you really want to get wonky about it, just looking at about migration, you can look in Plato's texts. There are ancient documents talking about migration and when people have the right to move and how you're supposed to treat them when they arrive in your country.
Interesting.
It's yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that. Because our immigration experience in America is so wildly different. But we're about to celebrate Thanksgiving. So maybe we'll all remember where we came from. Everyone
Keep
should take
mind.
Some time to talk to their family and trace back their family history and remind themselves where they came from and then look up the immigration laws that were in effect back then.
And that's why I love the Capitol steps so much, because the one thing they haven't changed is they have the guy being stopped at the border or being stopped by an ICE guy. And he's got this supposed person has a blanket around him, and he takes it off, and he's an Indian, and he's the one who really was the guy who was not the immigrant. It was the guard who was.
Right. Yeah. Which actually goes, if we have 2 minutes.
We do.
To talk about what happened this past week at the Albany County Jail Project that we've been working so hard on.
Now, this was some good news, right?
Good news. Great yeah. news. And I can say that over 80% of the asylum seekers that, as the listeners may remember, have been brought up straight from the border into Albany County Jail. And we've received another 32 in the last couple of weeks and have processed all of them
as well.
And
why is that, Sarah?
Because they're running out of space. So there's,
and why are we a destination of choice when there are so many possibilities?
Because the Albany County Jail keeps its recidivism rate so low that it sits underneath the state minimums for housing folks. So there are 300 beds available, essentially.
But the sheriff who's in charge has been basically pretty good, right?
Or fantastic.
Yeah.
And his staff. So the sheriff actually worked with us. We had an idea, you know, what if we used the county, not the sheriff's office, but the county is making $4 to $5 million this year.
Wow.
In federal payment for housing these folks. And of course, some of it goes to pay offset the cost of housing them, the religious services, the meals, the excellent medical care that they get inside of the jail, which is much better, I have to say, than the federal or private detention facilities down at the border, and certainly better than the tent cities that we're seeing pop up. But we had this idea, certainly we could convince someone in the county legislature to reallocate some of that windfall back into funding the work that we're doing, which is 100% volunteer. And the sheriff said, yeah, it's a great idea. So he was able to secure $170,000 so that we can hire a staff attorney and support staff to basically work full time at the jail with the asylum seekers.
So that's the good news.
That's the great news. And I think it's just the start. It's the largest. It's the first in New York State, the first time a county government has invested in civil legal services in that way. And it's the largest. Certainly the largest amount that any county has invested in civil legal services, probably in the country. We don't know yet. And we hope it's a trend that will continue. And the headline in the Times Union was just perfect. It said, "Mercy paid for by ICE." Because it's redirecting that money into actually helping folks make their claims for asylum. So they have a credible fear interview. We now know that we have an over 80% success rate for those credible fear interviews, which means that those folks, many of them, are eligible to be paroled out of jail. So that means they're getting out within 2 to 3 months of arriving here, as opposed to being stuck indefinitely at the border under these crazy policies that are being fought out in the courts.
So we have about a minute, but how do we replicate that to other places throughout the country so that we can see those same results?
We need to find more Sheriff Apples. We need to work on our local governments and work with those partners in law enforcement. This actually came through the county legislature. It's the legislature that controls the budget. So we worked with the chair of the legislature in order to get that done between him and the sheriff. So, all politics is local.
Right.
And we're taking local politics to push back on these awful federal policies, and I hope more counties will do it.
I take my hat off to you, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We'll find Mike Spain in the meantime, too. Sarah Rogerson is here, so is Alan Chartak. We'll be right back after. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Joining us, Sarah Rogerson. She is the Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Alan Chartak is here, and we're waiting for Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. I'm sure he will be along shortly.
Our wonderful friend Jim Hendler wrote a letter about you, Sarah. He said, kudos to Sarah. Having relocated from D.C. to Albany a decade ago, I don't know I've ever been as proud of my adopted hometown, Albany, as when I read about the Albany Jail immigration support decision. Thanks to Sarah and her colleagues for helping make this happen. I wish the rest of the country was so enlightened. Isn't that nice?
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah. And I should say that it's me and in a small army of people from all over the state. We really have built quite a team, and so I definitely couldn't do it alone. Certainly have worked with the Legal Project, which is a local legal services nonprofit.
What was the other story, and I wish I had more facts in front of me, but the other story that came out yesterday regarding from a lawyer in Buffalo that was working with a client, am I wrong on this?
Possibly. And okay, Buffalo is where one of the immigration courts is in the state, Buffalo and New York City.
I'll have to find out more about that. Alan, you have letters in front of you.
Okay. One other thing, and that is, I hope we're going to get to it today, and that is about Nancy Pelosi. I'm very interested in what's happening there. I'm very concerned that the Democrats are doing what Democrats always do, which is to form a circular firing squad once they get a little bit of power and start to kill each other.
Well, it's not all Democrats. It's 16 men.
Oh, that's interesting.
Not a single woman, I don't believe, on the letter.
So do you think
circulating.
This is a sexist problem?
I don't know.
She is the top woman in American politics today in terms of positioning.
And
she's,
I know that
third in line to be president after if the president and the vice president go.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
And we have other leadership in the other chamber, right? We have Senator Schumer, who I know he's a friend, but probably could use some
get up and go.
That's right. And we don't see similar letters circulating about his leadership. So it's interesting. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, but it is interesting. See, he's in the minority, as was she. So that when the power actually devolves...
Okay.
So when the power actually devolves, and that's interesting that, you know, there are people who say, okay, now's the time to do it. But I think it's a terrible idea. Look, I'll be honest with you. I've never been a huge Nancy Pelosi fan. However,
why is that?
I don't know. Because she's
incredibly effective.
Yes, she is. She is. There's no question. And I think the idea of removing her now is a terrible idea.
Great.
But this is part of what being a Democrat is all about in this country these days.
So now that we're into the subject, let's...
I apologize.
No, that's fine. Just hold on. You're not going to get the letters, though. That's fine.
Okay.
So what is fascinating, when you said, why is it? So, of course, the rap is Goldman Sachs and all of this, and the money and the corporatization of it. And so that's the rap. So...
Against Nancy.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say that about just about every established Democrat who's been successful. It's changing. We have a lot of Democratic candidates coming out and saying, I'm not going to take corporate money. I'm not going to take PAC money. Some of them are actually getting elected. And that will certainly change the landscape. But I think we need to push back and think about who the other people were that or are that are vying for that position. Nancy Pelosi is the most progressive. She's going where the party wants to be, it seems.
Okay, so let's face it, Sarah. One of the things that has happened in this country is that Trump, who loves having Nancy Pelosi as his foil, is now saying, we have to keep her, and I'm for keeping her. I can find 16 Republican votes, you know, in the House in order to get her elected, you know, as the Speaker. So they bloody her. They put her up there as the, you know, as the person that they would love to maintain in power so they can. On the other hand, they just won a huge election. And guess who found all the money for that election? She did.
That's right.
So she's a terrific inside player. And it's the inside versus the outside that one has to sort of look at here.
Yeah. And she'll survive this. It's not unexpected.
I've been saying that for days. I don't think. You know, you can't beat somebody with no one, although there are exceptions to that rule. Look at George Pataki beating Mario Cuomo. I used to say, well, you know, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And they did.
So in this particular case...
That was a shot, by the way.
Okay. There's an amazing New York Times Magazine piece today that's available online about Nancy Pelosi, and I think they're writing in a sort of a foregone conclusion that she'll weather the storm, but does document much of what you've talked about of how effective she has been in that job. And
Affordable Care Act is her deal.
Right. Among other things.
And, yeah, well, that's one major one.
So you look at the, and I'm interested in the, because even some of the new members who are coming in ran on this. Anthony Brindisi.
Interesting up there in Utica.
Has announced that he is not in support of Nancy Pelosi. You know, you wonder when push comes to shove, given the closeness of that race. He's running against a Trump Republican incumbent. And
Utica.
Right.
So.
Meaning that, do you have to say that because she was the...
You know, Joe, there's
the
always...
The devil in that race.
You know, right. Joe, there's always been a term which has been fascinating to me is when there's a close vote going on, you're either in the tank or you're off the hook. And you know that the Democratic leadership will let as many of those people you've just mentioned off the hook when it comes time because they want to get them reelected.
Then
there are a lot of ways in which you cannot vote for Nancy Pelosi and still be voting for her.
And Ocasio-Cortez, one of the first things she did when she arrived in Washington, D.C. was to protest Nancy Pelosi's office. Yeah. And now she's come out in support.
Right. I thought that was interesting, too.
And who knows what conversations occurred there, because Pelosi is not a taker of prisoners.
No.
And promises, sometimes you have to make certain promises in order to cement your position.
Yep. She knows how to whip. And she's gonna whip her way back into that job or maintain her position in leadership. And she knows exactly what to do.
And let's face it, there really is no opponent. There's no announced opponent.
Right.
So that's a big issue.
Right.
All right. Let's go to the letters.
Oh, thanks, Joe. And this is from Rocco, who says immigration. How long until citizens, especially those denied rights, see it unsafe in the U.S. and seek asylum overseas themselves? It seems to me to be getting closer and closer each day, Sarah.
To United States citizens relinquishing their citizenship and seeking security abroad? Is that...
No, that's what it seems to say.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bump in... citizenship, you know, voluntarily, I forget the legal term, that's kind of embarrassing, but basically relinquishing your citizenship. It was small, and I don't see
Canada
that happening.
Canada saw a bump, right? That was the news yesterday. I think they
what was that,
out.
Joe?
Canada saw a bump in people.
Yeah, my great-great-grandfather immigrated from Canada, and there are days, on bad days, I think about looking into...
Wouldn't that be nice,
looking
right?
into what sort of...
Is he a preacher
of,
also?
No, not that I know of. Okay. But yeah, so people come to the United States because of what we represent. And as bad as it is here right now in this moment, this country is still a beacon of hope for democracy around the world. We have no idea how bad it could be in other countries. Sure. I said I've worked on asylum cases. You know, read a couple of those.
You really want to go to El Salvador?
Right. No. No. And not even to visit. Right now, not reading the stories that people have. I just read another positive, credible fear interview that we received yesterday about an individual from a country where the police are attacking their own citizens. We just have no idea how bad it could be. So maybe that's my cheerful note for this holiday season.
Not only that,
it could be worse.
That's right. And not only that, you see leaders of the Trump quality. Winning elections in some countries that you might want to go to, like Italy, for example.
Brazil.
Yeah. So it's not so easy to find a place to go. Roselle's latest is Guatemala. She's got her eye on Guatemala. Okay, that's from Rocco. All right. And now...
Mike's band is on Central Avenue in Colony, and we'll be there shortly.
Well, are you able to trace it Uber-like on your device?
He's keeping me up to date, right? The little dot coming down Central Avenue. I think he's right in front of the Burger King now. Anybody want anything? No? Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keith says...
Keith, false alarm.
Keith says... Professor, that's you. Mm. What about the argument that asylum seekers should apply for asylum in the first country that they enter, in other words, Mexico? I'm starting to hear Trump supporters make this argument. I personally think Mexico is a failed state due to their murder rate and the drug cartels running much of the country. And that's from Keith.
Well, there are actually Trump lawyers in court this morning. I just read Dara Linda was tweeting from, I guess, inside the courthouse saying that the government's attorneys are actually arguing that there is an argument that the United States should force them everybody in the caravan to claim asylum in Mexico. We don't even have an ambassador to Mexico yet. We don't have a diplomat there because of this really, you know, slow and messed up administration. I don't know why we're sort of fixated on this idea that they should just be in whatever country they fled to, because we have asylum seekers from Mexico trying to come to the United States, asylum seekers from Honduras, El Salvador, even Guatemala, I'm sorry to say.
That's it. We're not going there.
Right. The path is to freedom, right? Don't we want people, this flies in the face of behavioral psychology, that we wouldn't want people to want to be where we are. Like, we love our country. It's great. We have a great reputation still, in spite of everything that
Absolutely
the Trump administration
true.
Has done. Why wouldn't we want other people to be here?
And John checks in on this whole question. Good morning, panel. It seems to me that when you can make a claim of domestic abuse to receive asylum, that those claims have as much validity as the Me Too movement. Uh-oh. No one can prove anything, and the applicant receives what they are looking for. Are we allowed to have a border at all, says John?
Well, that's just not true. I've worked domestic violence. Oh, here he is.
Here's Mikey.
Hi,
welcome.
Mike.
I heard you on the radio this morning, Mike.
Yeah.
So that actually, that listener actually gets to this other lawsuit on asylum. You might remember former Attorney General Sessions sought to limit the ability of people who are victims of domestic violence and gang violence to seek asylum in the United States. And there's another lawsuit challenging what he did there. I have worked on a number of domestic violence cases. There is proof for those cases. And I would push back on that listener and say that there is proof for me too as well.
So what's the proof?
Some people come having lost limbs, having been had acid thrown on them, having been impaled, having threats written down by their abusers, having their children killed by their abusers. We don't talk enough, and there's another story, you know, about what happened in the Chicago hospital in Mercy yesterday about the connection between mass shootings, gun violence, and domestic violence. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a segue into another topic, but this domestic violence is real, and it crosses class, it crosses race, and it definitely crosses country lines. And when your abuser is in the government or is a police officer, that's an untenable situation for these women. There is nowhere that they can go to be safe. There is nowhere where they can protect their children. So of course we have a border. We have a very sophisticated, highly technologically surveyed border with lots of manpower that is being actively regulated. They closed three ports of entry yesterday. So present yourself at a port of entry, but we're going to start closing all of those ports down, right? We regulate our border, especially our southern border, very, very intensely. And I think we all need to sit back from these talking points and think about really why that is.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will get Mike Spain into the conversation and bring him up to date, although I'm sure you've been listening, right? So you pretty much know where we are.
Okay, good. It's been a great show.
So it'll be even better with you on it. All right, we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Mike Spain is here from the Times Union, associate editor there. Sarah Rogerson is with us. She's an Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration and Law Clinic. Alan Chartok is here. Mike, anything you want to add to the stories that we have been talking about so far? I think we have Pelosi, we have asylum. What else?
I actually, on both, the first question I had for Sarah, I know you've been shouldering a lot of this talking today because you are the expert on immigration.
I love to talk. That's okay.
If somebody is able to present themselves at a open border crossing legitimately and claim asylum, is there any expectation that will be handled in a conventional way, a legal way, or is there some concern that the border agents have already been conditioned to disregard what they say?
Very much so the latter. We have stories coming out of the Albany County Jail, for example, where individuals indicated to us that Border Patrol officers actually actively dissuaded them, put them down, called them names. We have reports that people who presented themselves at points of entry lawfully trying to enter the country, claiming asylum, were automatically detained. And that's how they ended up here in Albany County, of course.
And that's why they're doing their fear documentation here instead of along the border.
That's right. We say that the federal government brought the border to Albany.
That's pretty interesting.
And we beam people in from the Arlington Asylum Office to conduct those credible fear interviews via telephone. An interpreter is also called in, and now we have a system where we can call in lawyers. The lawyers aren't allowed to say anything. We're only there to document our own side of what we're hearing the credible fear interview entail, because the only report officially that comes out of that comes from the asylum officer who is conducting the interview. So we're really just there as observers almost.
That's very interesting. I also heard your conversation about Nancy Pelosi. I don't know if you're going to talk more about it, but the—
We are now.
The thing that occurred to me, as I was listening and as I was reading the stories overnight about how, there's 16 new, there are 16 who include about a handful of new members of Congress who say they're going to oppose her. Nancy Pelosi is the villain that got that way largely because of Trump and other Republicans. So for people to oppose her, they're sort of succumbing to that nasty rhetoric. It's the same. It's very similar to what happened with Hillary Clinton. People say, well, I voted for Trump because I didn't like Hillary Clinton. Why didn't you like Hillary Clinton? Because she was so effectively demonized by the rhetoric. You know, you can debate Nancy Pelosi back and forth, but I think you identified it, Alan. You know, she's a very, very effective operative who has been successful in getting a lot of people elected to Congress. And I'm not sure what it is that is so awful about her, except that She's a woman, and it's easy for Trump to demonize her.
But then, Mike, then my question to you would be, what is this ridiculous rhetoric coming from him now that he wants to see her continue? Is he being sardonic that he thinks that she's, you know, they've done such a successful job in doing her in that he wants her to stay there?
Well, he might be fearful of what he might get. But I don't particularly pay much attention to very, you know, the immediate comments that the president makes, because he often reverses them within 24 to 48 hours, or because he says one thing, it doesn't mean that he actually means it. I mean, there is a credibility problem with the president. As you've pointed out, the Washington Post has tracked how many falsehoods he's
over 6,000 last time we looked.
Yeah, since he became president. So him saying that he'd like Nancy Pelosi to be there, you know, he liked Comey, he said. He liked, oh, Jeff Sessions is doing a great job. I mean, you know, so what? It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But if, you know, I think that some newly elected Congress members and even some veterans who were reelected have put themselves in an awkward situation because they knew they could win votes by rallying against Nancy Pelosi. And now when it comes time to actually pick a leader, I don't think there's anybody emerging who really could fill her shoes.
Yeah, but if you were them, and the only way you could have won was to do what they did, which you're correctly pointing out, then, you know, they have a real credibility problem if they don't.
They sure do. They sure do, and they'll be vulnerable, and it will affect them when they go for re-election in 2 years. But 2 years is an awful long time.
Yeah, it sure is. A day and a half is.
All right. You have letters, Alan.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Joe. Let's see here. Let's go. Daisy says, and we love hearing from Daisy. She's very incisive. I'm a huge fan of Nancy Pelosi's, and I want her to be reelected. But the Democrats are foolish if they don't start training a younger field to eventually take her place soon, within 2 or 3 years from now. And the same goes for Clyburn and Hoyer. Well, you know, Daisy, the problem with that, I think, is that they, when you say they, that they should be training, that ain't the way it works in politics. Somebody's got to put themselves forward in order to do that and to take that chance.
Well, maybe, unless the Democrats want to develop a deep field, right?
Yeah, but when do they do that? I mean, this is a dog-eat-dog world, this politics that we go through. And, you know, I mean, who would have thought Donald Trump would be the president of the United States until he walked down the staircase? I think of Andrew Cuomo these days a lot because he wants to be on our air more. And you know, he says he's not running for president of the United States. But when the pundits list all of the people who can already, Gillibrand is up there like number six, but Cuomo never makes the list. Nevertheless, if Cuomo, with all his fundraising ability and stuff, walks down the marble staircase, as did Trump, and announces, hey, I'm going to run for president now, then he becomes a candidate and, you know, he's self-identified.
Right. So there are people who want to take the power, and then there's also a way to cultivate power, though. And I think that this is something that women have learned to do in the workplace over the last several decades that has been incredibly helpful to getting other women in the pipeline for leadership positions. Mm. So for someone like Pelosi, I could imagine her asserting leadership in that way, too. We used to call that soft skills, but now it's just skills. It's another type of politics that that would actually prepare the party a little bit better when, you know, somebody walks down a marble staircase with sacks of money and insists on being in the ring.
Roger says, just a correction. Per the New York Times this morning, two women have signed the letter over leadership change. They are Kathleen Rice, New York, and Linda Sanchez of California. I agree with Alan. It's a mistake to try to remove Representative Pelosi now. It's simply bad to start off a new Congress with discord. I think, however, that Pelosi should be grooming new leadership. Well, she says she will be.
Yeah, and it makes sense just because of her age.
Well, what is her age, do you know?
I think 70s. She might be 77, Alan.
Yeah.
But she's in her 70s.
A mere child.
And, you know, so.
Johnny says, Pelosi, Pelosi is not effective. She's a
78.
What?
78.
She's older than you, Alan.
Pelosi is not effective. Is that a shot? Pelosi is not effective. She is a lesser version of Hillary. She is not great at communicating a message. She waits to see what's popular and follows. That is not a leader. Your ability to raise money is a stupid argument for why you should be a leader. And that's Johnny from Portland, Maine.
I got to say that Johnny just very effectively mouthed the rhetoric that's used against Nancy Pelosi. And I think that he's bought right onto it. And you know, rhetoric does gain some attention. But, you know, that's what she's up against. She's up against being blackballed by the right.
All right, let's pause there. We'll go over to news with Ray Graff and be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It's Tuesday, the 20th of November, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. And do you know where your panelists are? They're all here and accounted for right now. Mike Spain is here, associate editor of the Times Union. Sarah Rogerson is with us, Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic. And Alan Chartok with us, who has letters. Alan, a pretty good stack has accumulated. Let us go through them.
Thanks, Joe. Teresa says, the challenge to Pelosi is actually coming from the right of the party, not the progressives. Well, you know, we did see the change from Octavio Cortez, but she was an original anti-Pelosi person, and you could hardly describe her as being in the right of the party, unless, of course, you're going around the circle so far that you end up going from the left to the right. Do you know what I mean?
It is a political sphere, they say.
Oh. Okay, you have to get it. You have to think about that for a while. Ted says, keep Pelosi. Chuck, not so much. If Pelosi is ineffective, what about Schumer? Talk about ineffective politicians. Chuck takes first prize. And then we've heard from Jim, who says, Pelosi, good morning, panel. What I think we forgot is the progressive factor of the Democratic Party is trying to pull away from the big donor and corporate money. That's why progressives are against Pelosi. Now, this is exactly the opposite of the letter we had just gotten. So, pardon me. She represents the old school big money politics. We think the party needs to step away from all of that. The party is learning nothing. Thanks for all you do. And that's from Jim. Okay. And then we heard from Samantha. To Sarah's comment about not realizing how bad it could be and using the example of a country in which the police are attacking their own citizens, that is happening here. What else would you call militarized police forces acting against peaceful protesters, police murdering people of color, brutalizing young children of color, and inventing their excuses for doing this so after the fact, etc.? Exclamation point.
That is a fair point. I mean, certainly it's not happening at the rate that we're seeing in these other countries where you have the entire police force is corrupt. But there are definitely bad actors in our law enforcement ranks, and not enough is being done, in my opinion, to make sure that those bad actors are removed from power. We can always do more to protect Black lives.
You are so right. You know, I have an African-American grandson, and I am extremely worried about what happens when that kid grows up.
There was a security guard who was killed
in Chicago
yeah. last week, who was protecting people.
Yeah.
And the police saw the altercation, so they assumed that the assailant was the Black person, and they shot and killed him.
Right.
Boy. Mike says, Ivanka's emails. Is this deja vu all over again? Now it's Ivanka Trump who has been caught using private email accounts to conduct government business, in quotes. But there were no classified information within these emails, according to the White House lawyers. The criticism Donald Trump used against Hillary Clinton during the campaign was that she plays by a different set of rules. Can the same criticism be leveled at Ivanka and the Trump family? Sure looks like hypocrisy to me. And that's Mike from Glens Falls, or as we say around here, Glen Falls. Okay. Anybody? No.
Well, yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about the emails, but there is, I think, going to be a lot of people saying it's hypocritical. Now, the emails that Ivanka allegedly...
she wasn't Secretary of State.
...sent out. Right. They're pointing out she wasn't Secretary of State, but she was in the government. She was
and she's
working,
a White House advisor sitting right next to her.
And she's a White House advisor. And the big question is, didn't she know it was improper to do that? I mean, how could she have gone through the 2016 election and not know that?
But it isn't the larger story still the unsecured cell phone that the president regularly uses?
That's right. They can't get that away from his hands.
And then we heard from Aaron, who said, Pelosi led her. The statement that it is only men on the letter signed by 16 members against Nancy is incorrect. We already said that.
Yep.
Okay. And
we have two women now and 16 men, well, possibly more, as of last count, with 100 women in the House of Representatives.
And he says, there, at least, one female member of the letter, Kathleen Rice of Long Island. We know the two. And I believe there is at least one or two more as well. Also, very surprising to see four members-elect from New York on the letter. For the record, I believe Pelosi should be the speaker in the next Congress, at least for the next 2 years. And that's from Aaron and Sorgatiz. And Robin says, Pelosi is very effective. And then she says, at letting Republican war criminals off the hook. And then we heard from Kathy, who said, Pelosi, good morning. I'm thankful for the roundtable every day of the year. As for Nancy Pelosi, she is a brilliant strategist. She achieves success, but at the same time, she can be terribly inarticulate. This is why she has become a target. The job description for House Majority Leader is to raise money and strategize the legislation. It is not to be the most popular. And by the way, she's not. Well, yeah, she's going to be the speaker, not the majority leader. Okay, just a technical point. In fact, this person is the face of lots of unpopular stuff by definition. All that said, Nancy needs to come up with a transition plan. That, too, is part of the responsibility. And by the way, she says she will.
That's right.
Yeah, she's been praised for actually grooming leadership around her, and this will be the test this 2-year term. And I agree with the writer that, she doesn't have to win a popularity contest. She has to be effective in getting legislation through, and she'll know how to do it, and she'll be able to broker it with the other side. She's done it before. She's demonstrated those skills, and those are really important when you have a divided Congress.
Which is interesting because the next letter takes you to task for exactly the opposite, I think, which is Mike Spain did a disservice to the listener who said that Nancy Pelosi is not effective at articulating a clear Democratic position when he said the listener was mouthing a Republican talking point. I agree with the listener, and not because I listen to the Republicans. I agree because I've listened to Nancy Pelosi, as I believe the listener probably has too. There are far more effective speakers among the Democratic representatives. I cringe every time I hear Pelosi stumble her way through a wishy-washy statement. She may be effective at neoliberalism, but she's completely out of touch with the working class and progressives, in my opinion, says Anne.
And probably wouldn't have been a fan of President Lincoln either. We have sort of a quirky tradition in this country of having people who are very effective leaders who may not be able to give that bang up, you know, Thursday night speech to rally people around a vision for America. But that doesn't mean she's any less effective.
Well, there was something called the Gettysburg Address. You may remember that little one.
Not everybody can be Dutch, right?
But your point, I think, is still well taken, which is what you were saying, Mike, and not that I will defend you here, but the fact that what you were saying is that the letter writer was saying exactly what the Republicans and
in fairness to the letter writer, she said that she made that conclusion on her own, not because she heard the rhetoric from Republicans. But
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then Pelosi is the subject of the next letter from Ed in Akron, where everybody drives a foreign car, plays a musical instrument.
Yes.
And agrees
is that
with
in
each
the
other.
Letter?
And agrees with each other. No, I'm just offering that.
Observation. Yes.
Corporate and
what we call a bonus there.
Corporate and bankster backed hacks like Hillary, Pelosi, Hoyer, Dianne Feinstein, and Chuck Schumer are why Democrats lost to the worst candidate ever in 2016. None of them stand up for progressive issues like single payer health care, rapid phase out of fossil fuels, and winding down the war machine. Pardon me. These Republicans in sheep's clothing need to go. Pelosi, effective in quotes, for whom? T. Rump endorsed her.
Ed. Well, it just underscores what Mark Twain said. I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
That is indeed what he said. And Aaron said, Nancy Pelosi's two biggest accomplishments have been raising a lot of money, which is why progressives think she's corrupt in the first place. Rich people don't give politicians their money because they like them. And two, getting Obamacare passed when the Democrats had a total control of both houses of Congress and the White House, and they still gave us Romney Care with no public option. Under Obamacare, children in this country die of treatable cancers today. I don't consider that much of an accomplishment. In the richest country in the world. End of letters.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so let's talk about CNN for a moment. They are dropping the suit against the White House after Jim Acosta's press pass has been fully restored. There was a bit of a back and forth yesterday. CNN dropped its lawsuit against the White House on Monday after officials told the network that they would restore reporter Jim Acosta's press credentials as long as he abides by a series of new rules at presidential news conferences, including asking just one question at a time. Today, the White House fully restored Jim Acosta's press pass, CNN said in a statement. As a result, our lawsuit is no longer necessary. We look forward to continuing to cover the White House. The White House's move to restore Acosta's pass, announced in a letter to the news network, appeared to be a capitulation to CNN and its brief legal fight against the administration. White House officials had suspended Acosta's White House press pass following a contentious news conference on November 7th, prompting CNN to sue last week to force the administration to return it. Just 3 days ago, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders and Deputy Chief of Staff Bill Shine told Acosta and CNN they would suspend his press pass once again after the temporary restraining order against such an action expired. The 14-day order was issued by a judge Friday and was due to expire at the end of the month. CNN went to court seeking to block that action, and on Monday, the White House seemed to back down. What happened?
Well, I just find it particularly interesting that the White House is now standing up for decorum and protocol and all those things that it has consistently rejected, you know, like going to the unknown soldier's tomb after on Veterans Day. But anyway, I think our good colleague J.P. Miller, who was here last week, had it right when he said Jim Acosta needs President Trump and President Trump needs Jim Acosta.
Yeah, that could be. There may be some sour grapes in what you say, Mike, because, you know, I've discerned a certain amount of professional jealousy from some of his colleagues, Acosta's colleagues in the this is a hit, by the way. Acosta's colleagues in the press corps, you know, think that he's a little bit showboaty. And but
well, he is showboaty.
Yeah, but that comes with the territory. I
don't think there's anything wrong with it, but he's definitely a showboat.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Do you remember back in the 70s, Alan, when Dan Rather was sort of confronting Richard Nixon, and he showed up at a Texas press meeting one time and came to the microphone, and everybody cheered Dan Rather, and Nixon said, "Are you running for something?" And Rather said, "No, sir, are you?" And that, you know, they were both
Sam Donaldson,
right?
And
Sam
Ronald
Donaldson
Reagan.
Did it, yeah, with Reagan. I mean, it's a shtick that they do.
Well, I know, but it sounds, and both from you and Joe, I have to say, it sounds a little,
disingenuous.
Dog in the manger, whatever you call it.
I don't know what you mean.
No, nor do I.
Sure.
okay, I don't know what dog in the manger means.
It's one of those metaphors that leave people thinking.
A mean dog. A mean dog in the manger.
Anyway, well, it's great. Jim Acosta's back. CNN is back, and everybody's working.
I'd like to have my say, if I may, and because I don't get to talk that much. But one of the, but one of the things, that's what we call self-deprecation.
Yes, right? Yes.
Okay, it's the height of humor. So, here is what I think is going to happen. Obviously, there's a trap here. And the trap is the minute Jim Acosta
tries a follow-up question,
a second question, sure. And then out go the, you know, and then out they go again.
But that's for all reporters now, right?
Reporters must ask only one question of the president at news conferences, but they can follow up with another if the president consents. But reporter must then yield the floor.
Okay, so you have to say to the president, "Would you mind, Mr. President, if I ask the second question?"
No.
Next.
Which he did say the other day.
Yeah.
He said no.
Yeah.
And there you are. And here I am. So here's what I think is going to happen is I think that there will be another round on
this. He'll never call on Jim Acosta for the first question.
On the contrary. See, I think what you said in the beginning here, Mike, is true. They need each other. Mm-hmm. It obviously rolls the eyeballs away from his other problems, for example, with a special prosecutor and Khashoggi and
Saudi Arabia, sure.
and all the rest of
immigrants.
It. So yes, I think the key will be: does he call on his quote arch enemy to ask another question? Because as I've been saying for days, remember this all came about because he called on him last time.
Right.
Well, and it's not only the president. It's obviously Sarah Sanders, assuming she has press briefings again.
Right. They haven't been having them. I mean, that's something to note. You talk about protocol. With every other president, there's been routine daily press briefings. But the Trump White House press corps has not been getting those updates in recent months.
And instead, the president has been doing them on the fly as he's about to enter the helicopter, right?
Right.
And has been doing most of those.
Old shtick.
So you take that gaggle as opposed to any specified period of time for press.
You know, I'm so old that I really do remember quite well JFK.
Oh, they were artful.
On the press conferences. He could handle anything that they threw him. The meaner, the better.
Yeah, that was the topic of my college thesis for my journalism degree.
Oh, that's amazing.
JFK's press conferences.
Yeah, they were great. And then you may remember there was a comedian named Vaughn Meader. And he would imitate the press conferences.
The PT boat is mine.
Yeah, he was great. And then, of course, his career was cut short the minute that the president.
Right. He vowed after the assassination of President Kennedy that he would never do that. And he did. His career suffered. He was living in New Hampshire. He died a couple of years ago.
He did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of a tragic, sad ending when he.
You don't see many Vaughns around anymore. You had Vaughn Monroe. Remember him?
Mm.
Things like that. I thought I mentioned the Vaughn.
The glory days.
You're going with Robert Vaughn first, but okay. Meanwhile, in our moment left, we have the stock market
tanking,
and is not doing very well today either.
Where are we today?
I'm looking in very small print at the screen.
The stock market sell-off extended into a second day, erasing Wall Street's gains for the year as technology shares continued their slide.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. So what is it? It's down,
it's
what, 493 now? Is that do I have that right, Mike? Oh, right over your head.
Yeah, 494.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Apple stock was valued at over $1 trillion a couple of months ago. And now it's down to $880 billion. I mean, it lost more than $1 billion.
See what happens when you move to Queens?
Yeah. Well, that was Amazon.
Oh, no, what did you say? Apple. You said Apple.
Apple.
I'm sorry. Because Amazon went down yesterday, too, right?
Yeah. All the tech stocks are going down. Facebook is really
a good buying opportunity, folks. Get out there and buy.
Yeah, right.
All right. My thanks, everybody. Mike, thank you. Sarah, thank you very much. Alan, have a lovely Thanksgiving.
So
we'll see you tomorrow, and we'll be back right after this.